Last year, Evan Shapiro joined NBC Universal as an exec VP of digital enterprises. What does that mean? What is a VP of digital enterprises? Well, for starters, it means he's one of the people who created CISO. And apparently, he's also a professional hair model.
I'm into gals, but I want to make out with Evan Shapiro's hair. His hair is really good.
At least Jeff Davis and Dan Harmon think so.
Yeah, I noticed it. Well, people are starting to mention it. It's becoming famous hair.
It's good hair.
I feel like it's by his design that it's becoming
yes, of
famous.
Course. No, he puts. I don't think there's a lot of work into it, but I think it's he's got something special going on.
All right. Next segment.
I'm saying he didn't have to go into creating TV special video demand platform thingies. He could have just been a hair model.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he doesn't. He probably doesn't have to do anything. I'm
that
sure
means
he was
must
born
be really
rich,
good
right?
at doing TV. If he's right.
What?
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven. Before his illustrious hair modeling career, Evan Shapiro came to New York.
New York to be a writer in yeah. comedy. I mean, that's what I wrote, you know, in college and after college, I wrote a bunch of Seinfeld spec scripts. Yeah. The problem is I did these all before, like, computers really existed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have them somewhere, but they would be hard to find.
We met up at his hotel pool to talk about his journey.
I mean, I was never a professional writer, but it was a dream that I had. So I was actually working in the theater business, and I had a great day job. I was the head of marketing of the New York Shakespeare Festival in the public okay. theater. And then I was writing and directing at night in theater.
Yeah.
And then I started my own agency, which did marketing and production for a lot of Broadway shows, including Chicago and Bring the Noise, Bring the Funk and Rent and a whole bunch of other things. And it was at that moment I was clear I had to kind of make a choice here.
Uh-huh.
And I was getting relatively successful in the marketing and kind of, you know, the career end of it. And the writing thing was fine, but it was not generating income.
Yeah.
And so I made a choice. And at that point I decided I'm going to get so good at whatever I do in my career that it's going to allow me to get back to making content again. And by the time I was, so in 2004, I got handed the reins of IFC. So that was about 8 years after I made that decision. And then I was producing Dinner for Five and making documentary films like This Film Is Not Yet Rated with Kirby Dick, and got to executive produce Greg the Bunny, Hopeless Pictures, Portlandia, The Onion. And so it worked. Dedicating myself to one thing and becoming as good at that as I can took me to the place where I was making content again.
You said the word content there, and I know a lot of people kind of make fun of that word.
I would use the word art.
Okay.
But then
sounds pretentious.
It sounds pretentious, and people are like, "Well, art." I see art in everything.
One of my favorite books is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. It's a book about resistance, whatever can get in the way of doing what's important. Pressfield even goes as far as to say that the more important the job, task, dream, the more resistance we'll feel. And one of resistance's loudest voices is validation. Will I get paid? Will people like this? But most of the time, answering those questions can create uninspiring art. He writes,
"Of any activity you do, ask yourself, if I were the last person on Earth, would I still do it? If you're all alone on the planet, there's no one to impress. If Arnold Schwarzenegger were the last man on Earth, he'd still go to the gym. Stevie Wonder would still pound the piano. The sustenance they get comes from the act itself, not from the impression it makes on others."
The key to success in life and in business is figuring out what you would do even if you weren't paid for it.
If we were the last person on Earth, would we still show up at the studio, the rehearsal hall, the laboratory?
You obviously need to get paid
yeah, yeah.
in order to make a living. And to have a viable business, you obviously have to get paid. But, like, that's just, like, yeah, okay, you need air to breathe.
Yeah.
Let's put that aside for a second. Now, what's the thing that you would do every day for the rest of your life if you weren't being paid? And, you know, that's why Steve Jobs was as successful as he was.
Yeah.
Like, the money was important. don't get me wrong, but he was all about like perfecting the artistry of what he was doing. And to me, if I'm not passionate about what I'm doing, I can't do it.
What do you desire? What makes you itch? What sort of a situation would you like?
This is from a speech given by Alan Watts.
Let's suppose, I do this often in vocational guidance of students. They come to me and say, well, we're getting out of college and we haven't the faintest idea what we want to do. So I always ask the question, what would you like to do if money were no object? How would you really enjoy spending your life? Well, it's so amazing. As a result of our kind of educational system, crowds of students say, well, we'd like to be painters, we'd like to be poets, we'd like to be writers, but as everybody knows, you can't earn any money that way. Or another person says, well, I'd like to live an out-of-doors life and ride horses. I say, do you want to teach in a riding school? Let's go through with it. What do you want to do? When we finally got down to something which the individual says he really wants to do, I will say to him, you do that. And forget the money. Because if you say that getting the money is the most important thing, you will spend your life completely wasting your time. You'll be doing things you don't like doing in order to go on living, that is, to go on doing things you don't like doing, which is stupid. Better to have a short life that is full of what you like doing than a long life spent in a miserable way. And after all, if you do really like what you're doing, it doesn't matter what it is, you can eventually turn it, you could eventually become a master of it. It's the only way to become a master of something, to be really with it. And then you'll be able to get a good fee for whatever it is. So don't worry too much. Somebody's interested in everything. And anything you can be interested in, you'll find others who are. But it's absolutely stupid to spend your time doing things you don't like in order to go on spending things you don't like, doing things you don't like, and to teach your children to follow in the same track. See, what we're doing is we're bringing up children and educating them to live the same sort of lives we're living, in order that they may justify themselves and find satisfaction in life by bringing up their children, to bring up their children to do the same thing, so it's all wretch and no vomit. It never gets there. And so, therefore, it's so important to consider this question. What do I desire?
Not necessarily as esoteric, but the Good to Great, which is written by Jim Collins, three concentric circles. Your economic driver, so what's your rate of exchange, what you're passionate about, what you would do regardless of being paid or not, and then lastly, what is it you might do better than anyone else on earth? And if you can solve those three things and do anything, only the things that live in the center of that Venn diagram, which he calls the hedgehog concept, you will be innately successful. You will be great. And so my entire life has been built around just striving towards finding what those three circles are.
So is that CISO for you?
I think CISO is the culmination of a number of different things. I think CISO, for me at least, is if you look at what I'm doing, the team that's working on it. So I'm now working with, there are a number of different people on my team who this is either the second or third time they've worked for me.
Yeah.
There are other people who are working on the team who I've known for a decade and they still decided to work here. And it's a small team and we're working really hard. And the reason is because we're all so passionate about what it is that we're doing. Some are passionate because it's comedy. Some are passionate because it's a kind of elegant way to deliver art. Some are passionate because they feel like they can disrupt an industry that's full of disruptors. But we're all passionate. And that's, I think, hopefully, that's represented in the product itself and in the piece itself. The inspiration for CISO was not a television channel. It wasn't a piece of art. It was actually a record store in Atlanta, Georgia, called Wuck Street Records. And the idea is we want to be that vinyl record shop for content, for art. We want to be a collector a collection, a collector's item, a community. Yeah. And I think we're nearing that.
Perhaps like the record store in High Fidelity.
But every other Echo and the Bunnymen album.
Yeah, I have all the other ones.
Oh, you do? Well, how about the Jesus and Mary chant?
Yeah, they always seem...
They always seemed what? They always seemed really great is what they always seemed. They picked up where your precious Echo left off, and you're sitting around complaining about no more Echo albums. I can't believe you don't own this fucking record. That's insane. Jesus.
Well, the interesting thing about Green Day is that so much of their music is, in truth, directly influenced by, in my opinion, two bands.
The Clash.
Correct, Clash. But also by this band called the Stiff Little Fingers. I think you would really love this band.
We were just talking about this earlier. If you're in the middle of a Jessica Jones marathon or a binge, Netflix is the greatest service on earth. But if you're, you know, at home and you're just on the couch looking for something to watch, the big aggregators have become work. They've become laborious. It's kind of the Costco-ing of content. And we want to be a cafe. Not only do we want to be a cafe, we want to be a cafe that you love going into, where you feel like the staff knows your name, where the bartender knows your drink, but says, hey, I know this is what you like, but we just got this in. You should check this out. Yeah. And that's really what we want to try to do.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've been here again. My year anniversary at NBC Universal was yesterday. The fact that in less than 12 months we were able to get a platform launched with 20 original series. From the outside, really the biggest piece of resistance at first was convincing people like Dan Harmon and Matt Walsh and Matt Besser and other folks that this was a real thing, and that we were serious. The biggest piece of resistance moving forward is getting people all over the country to jump onto the site and on the platform and take out their credit card and pay. I think that's, to me, the scariest part of it. I think if you look at Radiotopia and you look at shows like 99% Invisible or Theory of Everything or The Illusionist, Memory Palace, you know, I think it's hard to argue with the level of artistry that they're attaining right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's where having a transactional relationship with the audience, where they're subscribing or not on a monthly basis, you know, it, to me is much more important than a Nielsen number. It's not even really counting the people who are watching. It's an aggregation or it's an extrapolation of 25,000 homes who are hand-selected by Nielsen. This is... I'm voting with my Apple Pay every month, and if you don't satisfy me, I'm going to take my chips and go. It's nerve-wracking as shit, to be honest with you, but at the same time, you know, I started in theater. I knew during a show whether it was working or not, because people were either leaving or clapping. I'm both very, very nervous for and very, very desirous to get back to that one-on-one relationship.
And so, therefore, it's so important to consider this question. What do I desire? Well, when we answer that question in a naive way, we figure out that we want a desire. What we want is to control everything. To create girls that don't grow old, apples that don't rot, clothes that never wear out, conveyances that get from one place to another instantly so we don't have to wait, power available to do anything that you could conceive and do it just instantly like that, to get this funny technological omnipotence. But if you take time out to think about that and really go into it with your full strength of imagination and find out whether that's where you want to be, you will soon see that's not what you want. Because the moment you have a situation where you are really in control of things, that is to say, in which the future is almost completely predictable. A completely predictable future is already the past. You've had it. That's not what you wanted. You want a surprise.
I really wanted to end this episode with like a nice bow, like a eloquent conclusion, wrapping up all these different concepts. And I guess you could say I was experiencing some of the resistance of trying to create something. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized it would just be me sharing an opinion. And the truth is, there's a lot that I resonate with what Evan talks about, with the good to great sort of concentric circles of finding something that makes money, finding something that you can do better than anyone else, and finding something that you're passionate about. And I also can relate to when Alan Watts talks about just figuring out what you would do if money was no option and doing that. And wherever I land, everything seems a lot harder in real life than it does sort of philosophically, as we're talking about here. And I guess I just wanted to create a space for you, the listener, to sort of reflect on what it meant to you. I didn't want to be so flippant or arrogant to assume that the conclusion I came to would be true to you, because this is hard. This is hard. There's a very real requirement and resistance that we all feel. We all have bills to pay. Many of us have families or friends or loved ones to take care of. A lot of us are struggling. And sometimes when you hear someone talking about pursuing a passion or chasing a dream or what would you do if money was no option, that can feel almost insulting, for lack of a better word. And I don't want to do that. I honestly don't, because I do think there's a lot of truth in what we've been talking about in this episode. And I don't have an ending. But that's life sometimes. We don't always get the nice bow we want. And I guess I'll just say thanks for listening. I know I say that every week, but it really does mean a lot. So yeah, hope you find what you're looking for.